B2. Number 23A.
Then we come to science, theology, and medicine, and here that unity of God with man is shown as Immanuel, God with us. He begins that chapter with Immanuel, God with us, Immanuel, showing that revelation and translation are one. See, that there is not the revelation and then asking, how can I translate that into human experience? That's duality. There is no such thing as having a new vista, seeing something higher, and then asking, how can I apply that? That's duality. Because revelation and demonstration is one. We cannot have two things in the oneness. There are only two aspects of the one thing. The moment we see something higher, it's a higher consciousness, and the higher consciousness is working, is demonstrating. So, if we have something in ourselves which says that revelation is separate from demonstration, then naturally that revelation is not never going to do a trick. It's never going to do anything. Then it remains a human concept, an intellectual concept, but not a living concept. But if we see that God said, let there be, and then he made it, and it was fulfilled, then we see that every statement is going to be translated into fact, and that fact will be complete. So, perhaps we have had a week together, a teaching which I have never given, and as I told you, I quite surprised myself and very, very much impressed that you didn't chemicalize so much, or practically not, with that teaching, because it was really a mouthful. But don't ask yourself, how can I apply it? It cannot be applied. It cannot be applied. How on earth can a little I apply that big I? How can a little I apply the enormous I am? The enormous I am is not just such a small little monkey or gnome who waits until I go and say what it should do. It is isness. What I understand is that my whole consciousness becomes attuned and atoned with being. The moment we touch the infinite touches us. The moment we have a touch of revelation, it is translation. But if we divide it in our consciousness, then we tear the whole thing apart into a theory and into a practice, and we do it. We stand then in the way. But if we could see science, theology, and medicine, that chapter where she says, everything is Immanuel, says, it is God with us. It doesn't say, I with God. That's the word chapters. It's God with us. Says, the moment I touch the infinite touches me. There is a two-way road. I cannot touch with consciousness something higher without that the higher is doing something for me. Therefore, the less we are bothered and think, how can I now apply these things and how can I apply it, the less we do that and just rejoice over seeing something clearer about being, just to see the being in a more transparent way, the more we open ourselves and have accepted the new vista. And accepting means conceiving. A woman can never accept and not conceive. The moment she has accepted, she does conceive and can't stop it. It comes. So it's all a matter of consciousness, the consciousness of unity between revelation and translation, between seeing and applying, that these are not two things, that they are one. So here we have that wonderful thing, you see, that in the measure as I am one with the divine mind, the divine mind is my mind. That's Immanuel. You know, it always at the last point boils down to very simple statements, which are terrific, you see. The moment I understand mind, that mind, divine mind, is my mind. You just think over it. The moment I touch spirit, God's spirit, spirit that blows everywhere, like the wind that blows where it wants, that it listens where, or how is it in English? The moving spirit, the moment I touch spirit, the spirit begins to be my spirit and begins to move. Begins to move all sorts of things of which I never dream of. Just begins to move my whole life. And so you can see that the moment you touch soul, soul is your soul. The moment you touch principle, principle is your principle. You can't separate it anymore. Unless we, with our human mind, make a separation again. And then we destroy the whole thing in our consciousness. So we come to physiology. Here, we haven't said the negative or the opposite of science, theology and medicine. God and we, you see, that's duality. Or man has a mind of his own. The moment I touch the divine mind, that divine mind is my mind. I have no more a mind of my own. No more a mind of my own. Wonderful. Why are people afraid of the world? I don't see why. If we have the mind which is God, if we are Godish, is God afraid of the world? Is God afraid of people? No. All right, let's go to physiology. And in physiology I've said God is omnipotent in truth and in belief. See, that's the unity. So that we don't say, yes, God is right up in heaven, but then comes the but, which is already disrupting the unity and says, but down here where I am, here is my problem. And so I make a division between truth in the spiritual and truth in the human. Whereas truth is one, namely is omnipotent in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. That I must see. The moment I say to myself, but how can that wonderful spiritual truth be the truth of my body, the truth of my life? How do I translate that? Then I have disrupted my consciousness of unity. I have made two. Truth in heaven, separated. How can that truth be in earth? Truth is truth in heaven and in earth. In truth and in belief. And that is brought out here in physiology so well. For instance, she says, mind is the source and condition of all existence. Not only of spiritual existence, of all existence. It's a funny thing, you see, that we have somehow been brought into the belief that truth is wonderful truth in the truth. But how is that truth also truth in every human experience? That's disrupting the unity of truth. We would see that truth is one, and it is one. And it's the truth in the realm of truth and in the realm of belief. Oh yes, God and all conditions are one. See, that's a statement from that chapter where she says that mind is the source and condition of all existence. So that God and all existence and all experience is one. Why then do we say, I have had a very bad experience? I go through a very bad experience. We say, we disrupt the unity. We disrupt the unity and say, God has not been in this experience. God has been outside of this experience and has left somewhere a place where something else can be but God. Think of what it means when we came to say to every experience that's God working. It's for the good. I can only be blessed. I remember that's one of the human traits I could see in John Dorley so well all through. Whatever happened, it just said, well, there is a blessing in it. Seemed that hell and high water could come, and it just was jolly happy and said, well, there is a blessing in it. For him, mind was the source and condition of all experience, and not just of those which we like. That's unity, you see, that's oneness. And that is what brought out. It's that great sense. The moment we have what is called a big problem, the moment we are going to see that this is not the big problem, that it is God at work, and therefore we accept the situation not as it is, but accept the situation as a working out of God's idea, well, then we are no more struggling against it. We are no more fighting against it. Then we are not always saying, I have a problem. I have to work out a terrific problem. And that is duality. Then we would say, the idea is working out something wonderful. The idea is going to show me something wonderful. Then we have unity of God and all conditions. You see why this is the Christianity sense in here? All conditions. Every condition in the universe. That's why... Now, all right, let's go further. Here in this chapter he speaks, therefore resolves a lot about working from two standpoints, serving two masters. That's the duality, you see. From working from two standpoints. That standpoint resets to a condition. This is a very good condition. This is a very good experience. I have, and says to the other, this is a bad experience. This is a bad condition. This is a terrible condition. That's working from two standpoints. From me saying what is good and evil. But in the oneness of being, there is no good and evil. There is just the idea working. And the idea working never asks if something is good or evil. It says it's the idea. And the idea, humanly seen, is always good. Mortally seen, it can be very evil. Can bring whole Israel into captivity. Footsteps of truth. We see here the coincidence of the divine and the human. You see again God's unity with man. There is only one I or ego. That's what she brings out in this chapter very much. She says there is only one I or ego. Therefore there is that coincidence of the divine and the human. The human is always showing forth the divine. And there is no duality of the divine and the human. And this resolves that divinity is separated from humanity. The personal I separated from the divine I. That's the duality. That I have a personal I, and I believe that Moses has seen that God is also an I and that I am. The belief that I have a mortal I, a mortal I am, a rotten I am, and that Jesus, he naturally, he had a wonderful I am. This is duality. It's not going out from the one being where I see it. That one being has a one I am, and that I am Jesus had, Mrs. Eddy had, we have, all have. There is only one I am. All the other so-called I's, can you say that? Personal I's and egos are just not true. Then we come to the next vertical column, Christianity. I have just to hurry a little bit. And there we see the unity or the oneness of being as one universe, namely God idea. See, here I didn't say idea. I said God idea. Because I want to bring out the oneness is that the idea is not isolated. That it is always God. That God individualized is idea, but still remaining God. This is my pet sentence. But that this helps me, you see, to break in me the belief that, uncertain belief that there is a God and that man is idea, but that idea somehow is not God. So I reaffirm that to me always and say, all right, then mind, that man is mind individualized, is the idea of mind, but still remaining mind. I always add that. That man is the idea of spirit, but still remaining spirit. The idea cannot be separated from its principle. So it gives you that constant sense that there is one being really. Principle and idea, one, and this one, God. So in creation we have only one universe turned into one, the universe of the infinite one. And this resolves the beliefs of duality that we have a finite and an infinite universe. We talk about, yes, the being is infinite and we have an infinite realm of ideas, and then we are mesmerized by a finite universe. Therefore we have a duality in our consciousness. We have not a universe, we have a multiverse. Or we have a diverse, but not a universe. If we would have a universe, then it would all be unified in one consciousness. And that's the consciousness of ideas. Of ideas, of God. Therefore, a universe of mind idea, spirit idea, soul idea, principle and idea, of life idea, of truth idea, of love idea, then I have a universe. And I'm not going to ask what's going on in Moscow or what's going on in Washington or in Vietnam or anywhere. I have a universe of ideas. And these ideas rule. They rule much more mightier than any war machine can rule. Then signs of being. Here is shown only one evolution. You see the universe in evolution. There is only one evolution of the universe, the spiritual. She gives in Signs of Being three great parts. The one shows the evolution of the idea. The second part shows how that evolution of idea has shown itself forth in the human. And then gives the third part the platform. So it shows that we shouldn't really separate between a material evolution like we witness on the earth from the first cell up to man, a material evolution and a spiritual evolution. It's one evolution. If you read that thing on Dunui, we see, or we have taken it this week, that it is the spiritual idea that evolves. And as the spiritual idea evolves, the material universe involves, that the way the spiritual idea unfolds, the material universe infolds. The measure that the spiritual idea progresses, the material universe regresses and gives up its claim. Because the whole... No, I can't go further. I must go on with the text here. So let's see that there is not a material evolution and a spiritual evolution. The material evolution is just the giving way to the spiritual evolution. The retrogression of the claims of matter and giving place to the unfoldment of spiritual ideas. Then we come to the chapter, Some Objections Answered. Here, principle and practice are one. She shows there that the objections which she has to answer is that theory and practice are two things. That statement and proof are two things. That's the belief. And so shows in the unity of being there is just oneness, a oneness of principle and practice, of statement and proof, of teaching and healing, of understanding and demonstration, that this is oneness, and that we shouldn't put up really a sense of duality which says that understanding and demonstration is separated. Then we come to Christian Science practice. Here it's a long chapter, and I just take the main point of it. She gives there various shades of oneness. The health of God is the health of man. That's what she wants to say. That the health of God is the health of man. If it wouldn't be so, man couldn't be healed through God. Because if God is health, then man must be health. That there is just the idea, health. That's what's true. Can you see what I want to say? That only because of that unity of health as principle and idea, unity of health as God and health as man, is it at all possible that man has health and that therefore man can be healed. The counterfeit is, the dualism is what most Christian scientists do. They try to apply ideas to disease. That's the duality. That ideas which are positive can be applied to something which is negative. That there is an intercommunication between ideas and illusions. There isn't. The healing is to see that the health of God is the health of man. And that's the unity. There isn't a health of God which can be applied somewhere and plastered on to something which is disease and say, through that plaster, that disease becomes well. It is seeing that right through God and man, through the whole universe, through the whole of being, goes a state of wholeness. And that's the health. Therefore, healing here is nothing but accepting wholeness, accepting the perfection of being, going out from perfection and remaining in perfection, never leaving perfection. Then we go to the last column of science, and here we see one integrated science. She gives now a sense that science is one, and that there is no duality in science and understanding. Teaching Christian Science first says, only like can understand like, knowing science through science. I think this afternoon I may have time to touch on this a bit closer, because this is important for us, because we want to learn science. We want to be self-teaching science. The teaching Christian Science is really showing how to be your own teacher. It doesn't say how to go through class. It shows that everyone who reads that book is his own teacher. And so it is self-education, self-teaching. How can we be self-teaching? By saying, I am the mind of science. Only by seeing that I start by being the mind of science can I know science. See? And so only understanding can understand understanding. No other way. Ignorance cannot understand understanding. Only science can know science. This is an old doctrine right from the old Greeks, from Thales of Miletus. He already said that as one of the leading points, that only understanding can understand understanding. So the counterfeit is to instruct ignorance so as to become understanding. See? Can you see that point? Now, we have been considering all during this week, so to say, the way of understanding, right from the atomistic point of view up to the comprehensivist point of view, or the point of view of oneness of consciousness. And so we arrived at its climax. Now, what else could I say now? The thing is always that We have to consider the letter and the spirit. And as long as one presents just the science of being in its developing sense from one stage to the other, it is quite clear that the student first gets the letter sense of it. But we know that the letter must be wedded to the spirit, that both are necessary. It is not so that we only need the spirit. Today we need both the letter and the spirit. Mrs. Eddy's works are full of indications about the import of the letter and of the spirit, and she says quite clearly that the ancient healers may not have had the word, but they may have had the spirit, and that having the spirit did not prevent them to do the healing work, but they couldn't explain it. That was all right at that stage, but Mrs. Eddy came in order to show to each one how to get the spirit. In earlier time it was just a special dispensation to some people that they had a natural sense of spiritual things, and therefore, like the ancient worthy, could have great demonstrations on the basis of the spirit of it. But Mrs. Eddy says that they were looking for a higher dispensation, namely for the science. Even Jesus really never gave us the letter, but he always presented the spirit. He didn't give us the letter in so far as he never showed the science of it. Mrs. Eddy said that she came and knew that in ancient times people would have wonderful demonstrations and brought forth wonders on the basis of uplifting faith, and then says, but I must know the science of it. She could see that in our age, in the age of science, it would be a much greater dispensation to the world if instead of having a few inspired spiritual thinkers and healers, we would find a science which could be taught to everyone who wanted to be taught and who was willing really to learn. So the spirit alone is not enough today. So often we hear, well, there is no use about the letter, all this studying and all this investigation and analysis of the textbook and of the Bible just doesn't do a thing. All that matters is the spirit. All right, all that matters is the spirit, but where do you get it? If one doesn't belong to those very rare people who have it in a natural way, then how should we get it? And Mrs. Eddy says that naturally, that to those born of a woman, science must be a discovery. And it must be discovered in a systematic, logical way. You know, it is said that Mrs. Eddy asked in one of her class, why did Christian Science get lost? Did it get lost after Jesus' time because of the lack of the letter or because of the lack of the spirit? And naturally, no, it could be understood that the students answered because of the lack of the spirit. And she said, no, because of the lack of the letter. Because the letter did go lost, nobody was able to imbibed the letter such that it melted or blended into the spirit, that it was wedded to the spirit, that the letter, by pondering the letter and praying about that letter and about the clear letter, the scientific letter, that that would be the way how to evolve the spirit of that letter. And so she put quite stress on the fact that we should not scorn at the letter, but on the contrary, that what was needed would be the absolute letter, because the absolute letter, when pondered, when we love it, then the letter unfolds and becomes a warm sense of spirit. To those who know the system of Christian Science, it isn't something abstract. It has not anything of the touch of being academical, but it's something very warm, very living, very joyous, very near to the heart. So I would like to devote an hour or so to the question how this pondering of the letter is leading to the spirit, how through our cultured analysis of the signs of being, we step by step somehow are led into the one being.